going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome on into our third average hour of Draft Fest Sunday coverage. It is Sunday fun day as we recap the Saints picks in the 2020-25 class. And it's 9 selections we've been going through. And also, it is official now. The Saints have put out their undrafted free agent class, which we had talked about earlier. There's no new additions to that list they put out, right, Jeff?
11 names. Yeah. We went through all earlier in the show. Those are all there, yep.
So we, after our first break, we're going to talk to Sam Bruckhaus, former Tulane linebacker, also works now with Sumer Sports, analytical website, as we break down the draft class. We'll get in more of this hour into kind of thoughts around the NFL since we've been talking about the Saints the first 2 hours. And just curious from what you guys saw and think right off the bat, did any people or teams, I guess you'd say, stand out in this draft as really hitting that home run for their squads?
Well, anytime you can get a first-round talent at number 59, you win the draft, in my opinion. And so, like, and the Ravens, you know, we this is what I said in the first hour. Like, how do good teams stay good?
Right.
They do the vetting on a player that's falling in the draft, feel good about it, and land a guy like Mike Green. I mean, he's a first-round pick. No question. And I think a lot of times what happens with players like that is, yes, there are some legitimate off-the-field concerns, but, you know, not necessarily – okay, we can't draft this guy. We don't feel comfortable drafting this guy because there are question marks. And when you're drafting a player, you know, the way you describe it, you know, however you describe it, you're basically marrying that player. You don't marry someone that you're not sure about. You marry someone that you're in love with, you know, or maybe you marry someone for a green card, but that doesn't fit into the analogy. Anyway, so, you know, a lot of teams may have had concerns about it. So he fell and he fell and he fell and he fell. But the Ravens were a team that did all the vetting. They turned over all the rocks. They talked to the people they needed to talk to, and they felt good about it. And so they get the, you know, NCAA leader in sacks and a guy that, you know, showed up at the Senior Bowl, blew up 2 first-round offensive tackles, and then said, "I'm good. I'm leaving. You know, I'm leaving on a high note like George Costanza." And so the Ravens, a team that traditionally is this elite defensive group, ends up with Mike Green. And I think the rest of their draft class was solid as well. So that would be mine. Like, when you that's the steal of the draft. In 2-3 years, we're going to be looking back and saying, how the heck did Mike Green get to the second round? And it'll be because, you know, it wasn't until the Ravens that the team felt comfortable with it.
Right. Guys, I'm going to go with a couple for ones that I like. And then I think this will kind of lead into the talk about Shadur. Right. The Browns draft was weird.
But Mel Kiper Jr. gave him an A+ because they got Shadur, baby.
Of course he did.
Weird? In what way? How could you possibly?
The Browns?
You draft 2 quarterbacks. You draft 2 running backs. Like, you don't address much else.
You trade
off
Adam
of Travis
2.
Hunter.
Yeah. You trade to not take a generational player.
Yeah, and you get it was a very strange draft.
A+, baby.
For them. But I want to actually address a couple. Unfortunately, and I guess it also kind of depends on what you think of Tet McMillan, the Panthers kind of killed it in this draft. Dan Morgan, I think, did a really, really good job. And Tet was...
They were very active.
Yeah, Tet was the first, I think, big surprise in the top 10. Like, all those players, you kind of expected... It was a gigantic smokescreen because it caught everybody that they were going to take Jalen Walker or take a defensive lineman in the first round. Instead, they take Tet and get Bryce, the big body target with pick number 8 overall. But then they go defensive line back-to-back picks with Nick Scorton and then Princely Umanmielen, two SEC edge rushers.
I did like Etienne as well.
Etienne in the fourth round, as you were mentioning. Lathan Ransom, the safety from Ohio State, in the fourth round as well. So two fourth-round picks, two fifth-round picks. Cam Jackson, defensive tackle from Florida. And Mitchell Evans, the tight end from Notre Dame. And then sixth round, Jimmy Horn. I think that is a very good draft class, unfortunately, in the NFC South. Another one that I really liked, and this is just kind of personal, I loved at least the start of the Lions draft, getting Tyreek Williams in the first round, who is just a brick wall. And then in the second round, doubling down on just the beef and getting Tate Ratledge, the interior offensive lineman from Georgia, Isaac Tesla in the third round. Miles Frazier, who I thought could have been a fourth-round pick or maybe even a third-round pick. I think it was like number 86 on Mike D's big board. Falls into day three and then falls all the way into the fifth round. I think they potentially got a starting guard in the fifth round. That's really good as well. But just talking about like the Dan Campbell mentality of winning up front, and you get three quality linemen and a potential high upside swing with Isaac Tesla, the wide receiver in the third round.
I'll give you one more. I thought the Seahawks had a sneaky good draft. And, you know, not a lot of people are talking about it because they didn't have – You know, they went with a guard in the first round, Greg Zabel, but I think he's the best interior lineman, can kick out to tackle. And then they probably got the best athlete in the draft, Nick Amonwori. He probably should have been a first-round pick, positional value, right? Some question marks. Best athlete in the draft, no question. They got him in the second round. And Elijah Arroyo.
That was
one
I had on my Saints wish list.
Out of Miami, right. So, you know, like fantastic tight end out of Miami. And then Jalen Milroe, you know, like a guy that – I think in Clint Kubiak's offense can be really good, you know. And then it's just a lot of really, really intriguing options. Torrey Horton out of Colorado State, I think, is a sneaky good pick. And so, I mean, the Seahawks, team that has their quarterback, has like a developmental quarterback, builds a really, really good team, I think.
Curious to see, you know, how Clint Kubiak now fares over with the Seahawks after just 1 year here in New Orleans.
Yeah, it'll be funny if his offense finally clicks. I don't know. This might be his last shot. If he flames out there, it's going to be tough. What you'll say is this is his first chance to be an offensive coordinator on a staff that is not, you know, kind of marked for slaughter. He was the offensive coordinator on Mike Zimmer's staff, and it was like, yeah, okay, well, we'll give you this very short leash, and then if not, send you into the sun. Same thing happened. So
one last thing before we get into the Browns. I liked the Cardinals' first three picks. Yeah. I don't know too much about their day three selections. Walter Nolan in the first round. I mean, listen, if that kid hits, he's going to be a terror on the interior defensive line for years to come. He needs to be in the kind of right frame of mind, is kind of what Mike and I were talking about with him. But he's got all the talent in the world to be a legit NFL stud for a long time. Second round, you get one of the best value picks in the entire draft. If he's healthy, Will Johnson at pick 47.
Yep.
I mean, unbelievable that he fell out of the first round and he fell into the middle of the second round. The Cardinals, you could have told me that entering the draft, Will Johnson was their first round pick. I would have believed you. They got him in the second round and got Walter Nolan. And then they got Jordan Burch, an edge rusher that we talked with Pete Jenkins about. Pete worked with them. He's a South Carolina guy. They got him in the third round. I love those first three picks for the Cardinals for their defense. I think they definitely bolstered that. And now let's dive into...
Wait. One more. Can I give you one more?
Okay, go ahead.
Like, super value draft, the Giants.
The Giants did what they were supposed to, it felt
like.
Well,
I mean...
With Abdul Carter
specifically. Yeah, so Abdul Carter, that's the right pick. I think they were trying to get a trade, but that's the right pick. I think he's the best. You know, you can say him or Travis Hunter. You know, some people had Abdul at the top. Some people had Travis Hunter at the top. You know, elite edge rusher.
Yeah.
Then they still get their quarterback in Jackson Dart. They trade in. They don't give up a ton.
Yeah, two third-round picks.
Darius Alexander out of Toledo. I could come or take or leave that. But
he's
then
an NFL-ready. He's an NFL-ready defensive tackle. He's an older prospect. I think he's like 25, 26.
Oh, so old.
But then, yeah, well, I mean, he's a guy that, like, and I think he was at the Senior Bowl, huh, Jeff? Darius Alexander?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was one of those guys that really made a lot of money in the pre-draft process, that, you know, someone kind of from a smaller school but just went and terrorized offensive linemen at the pre-draft process events. Yeah, I got there. Yeah, I like that pick too.
But then Cam Scataboo, fourth round.
Sadly love that pick for the Giants.
Yeah, and they needed a running back. They got a running back. And then Marcus Embo, who I think was one of the top interior linemen.
It's Bo.
Embo, yeah, right. You know, so, I mean, like, you got, like, I don't know, that's what, five starters? It's a pretty good
haul. Nice pieces, yeah. Right.
No, it was a good draft for Joe Shane.
I'll throw one in, too, for me. I like the New England Patriots. Thought they did a lot around to help Drake May beef up that offense for them. Will Campbell, LSU guy, their fourth overall pick. Trayvon Henderson, the running back out of Ohio State in the second round, and their two third-round picks. Wide receiver Kyle Williams from Washington State, and then the Georgia center, Jared Wilson there. Like the focus to surround Drake May with to have success as much as possible, because what we saw from him, he definitely looks like a star rising.
And Trevion Henderson, as much of a home run play waiting to happen as he is when he has the ball in his hands, he's one of the better pass-protecting running backs in this class.
Yeah.
He's an instant three-down back and someone that, you know, if you try to blitz Drake May, he's going to take your head off. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the Patriots had a good draft.
Jeff, looking at your question, I know it was about the second round and quarterbacks where the Saints ended up taking theirs and Louisville's Tyler Shuck.
I'm sorry, I was going through. Can you ask that question again?
Your question was about the second round in quarterbacks. And the Saints had taken theirs, obviously, in round two this year, being Tyler Shuck. The only time they've taken a quarterback in team history in round two.
Yeah, so, you know, I did want to go through, like, the whole list of second round picks. We have time for that?
Yeah, we could do this.
All right, so give me thumbs up, thumbs down. So, Tyler Shuck, pick 40. None in 2024. In 2023... Will Levis, which...
Thumbs down.
Yeah, I mean, still got time. You're talking about year three.
We should have known when I'm putting mayonnaise in coffee.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, eating bananas with the peel on, stuff like that. You know. 2021, Kyle Trask.
Thumbs down.
Yeah. He was a 64th pick, so pretty late in the second round. Jalen Hurts of the Eagles.
Thumbs up.
Yeah,
he's been to two Super Bowls, got a ring already, right.
I think he's pretty good. Drew Locke of Broncos in 2019.
Boo. Thumbs down.
2018, there were none. DeShone Kizer to the Browns in 2017.
It's the Browns, so thumbs down.
Christian Hackenberg to the Jets in 2016.
Boy. Oh, my goodness. Thumbs
terrible.
Down.
Now, this is an interesting one. 2014, Derek Carr to the Raiders. The funny thing, it's like people are going to want to say thumbs down.
The famous YouTuber?
The famous YouTuber, Derek Carr.
Homegrown network.
The homegrown network. People are going to want to say Derek Carr, but like we're talking about a second-round pick. Derek Carr's career is a highly successful second-round pick, so... You know,
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, I mean, like we don't like Derek Carr right now, but like if you're talking about total career second round pick, when you think of like, oh, Christian Hackenberg, DeShone Kizer, okay, yeah. Thumbs up. Jimmy Garoppolo is an interesting one because second round pick, he was a 62nd pick, went to the Patriots. Yeah. He started a couple games in the year that Tom Brady got suspended. Patriots ended up trading him to the 49ers. Ended up going to the Raiders. You know, so a couple Raiders quarterbacks there. He was kind of right in the middle.
Right.
Brock Osweiler in 2012.
Thumbs down. Man.
And then a couple others. Really interesting in 2011. Andy Dalton at 35.
Thumbs up.
I got to give a thumbs up for Andy Mann.
Absolutely. Oh, you're going to give Andy a thumbs up? You're not going to give Derek a thumbs up? They had the exact same career. Anyway, Colin Kaepernick to the 49ers in 36. He went to the Super Bowl. Yeah, right there. I think he's in the middle. And here's the thing, like, because we're comparing him to Jimmy Clausen in 2010, the guy who Mel Kiper said he was going to retire if he wasn't any good.
You're making me feel bad now, Jeff, with this history of second round quarterbacks.
Well, that's what I mean. It's hit or miss. It's hit or miss. That's my point.
There's been a lot of misses. Right.
Well, right, but it's hit or miss. It's probably 50-50. That's
where's the good 50? Let's come on.
What are you talking about?
Like
I know Jalen Hurts so far is the only one I've really liked.
Jalen Hurts and okay, again, Derek Carr's career. He's played 10 years. He's 20th all time in passing yards.
We're like 3.5.
Andy Dalton again. So you're talking about, and I'm not saying there's better ones. There's better ones.
I know. Okay. I've been waiting for the big one.
2008, Brian Brohm and Chad Henne. No. 2007. Kevin Cobb, John Beck, Drew Stanton.
Dear
no.
Lord.
2006, Kellen Clemens and Tavares Jackson.
You're not making me feel good here, no way.
Now you went 4 years without a single one. 2005, 2004, 2003, 2002, zero. 2001, Drew Brees.
There you go.
The light and the shine that shines down from heaven.
The caveat with Drew Brees is that he was the 31st overall pick. If it happened today, he would have been a first round pick. Yeah. Then Quincy Carter to the Cowboys. Marcus Tuiasosopo. So, I mean, like.
Good pronunciation, sir.
Thank you. He went to the Raiders. So, I mean, that's the thing. That's why taking a quarterback in the second round is it's a sketchy proposition. But, you know, there are some long-term quality quarterbacks on that list. There are some guys who are like, wow, I forgot about them. There are some guys that started games. Jimmy Garoppolo weren't great. There were some guys who got decent contracts. So, I mean, that's where you are. You're talking about a kind of a 50-50 proposition.
We're going to take a break here.
I missed one.
Okay, go ahead.
Geno Smith.
Okay.
Geno's all right. I'll give him a thumbs up
like
on that one.
That's the sixth good name in the last 20 years.
At least we ended on
there's 20 names on here. 10 of them probably had long-term careers.
We'll take a break. When we get back, we're going to talk to Sumer Sports data analyst
Sam Bruckhouse joining us here on our Draft Fest Sunday coverage. We've been talking Saints. We'll do some more black and gold talk, but also focus on the rest of the NFL, especially the NFC South, too. So stay tuned right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Welcome back into our Draft Fest Sunday recap coverage. Talking about the Saints' 9 selections in the 3 days of the draft and helping us break all that down. Sam Bruckhouse, former Tulane linebacker, now a Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and also a data mad scientist, joining us here to help us break down these picks. Man, how was your draft, Sam? How's it going today?
It's been awesome. I did about 10 to 15 hours of live streams watching the draft. It's just exciting, especially being an ex-player and of course, seeing some Tulane guys come off the board as well. That these guys' lives are being changed and they're moving into, professional football that we all take so much stock in, we all love to watch. And so really, I love the draft because it's just a jubilant affair all around.
Curious your thoughts. So I'll start with the Saints and their second round selection of Tyler Shuck, making waves a lot of folks around the NFL. And just curious what you think of the Louisville quarterback.
So there's certainly pros and cons to this selection. The pro is that, number one, typically in the data, we have a problem where we never know which quarterback will be correct. You try to pick the guy who will fit your system the best, and it seems that is what Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis did with this selection. When you draft quarterbacks, it's kind of like rolling the dice, and I'm glad they did it, especially given, the questions about Derek Carr. We also have Spencer Rattler on the roster. It will give the Saints many options at the quarterback position, which is so important. The only item that I would criticize a little bit is typically when you start getting out of expected draft position range. All these teams have models, and the public has a model as well. Tyler Shuck was kind of pretty far away from that selection. It was a little bit of a reach. I thought they could have waited a little bit longer. But at the same time, the quarterback pressure that teams feel is immense. You never know when a run is going to happen on quarterbacks, and everyone needs one. So all around, I'm okay with the selection, and I'm excited to see how Tyler Shuck performs in mini camp. Just a little bit of background on him. His superpower is not getting sacked. And I know throughout the most recent years, sacks and negative plays have killed the Saints offensively, especially last year where we were able to get our run game kind of going, and then we'd hit that negative play. Shuck avoids negative plays, and I think that's going to be the key for his success at the next level.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you talk about reach because it's like, okay, you're picking at 40, then you have a pick at 71. So would people have preferred not picking him at 40 and then giving up more assets to go up from 71 to wherever you felt comfortable with? So it's kind of tough because if that's the quarterback, you got to go get him. I do think that's an interesting point because I hear people talk about throwaways. And one thing that I think young quarterbacks in the NFL struggle with is the understanding of when a play is dead, when to dirt a ball so that you can live to play another down. Like Caleb Williams, for example, it's like half the sacks he takes seems like, dude, the play's over. Like, I get it. You can extend a play. You did this in college, but you're hurting your team. The game against the Vikings last year was an example of that, where they went to the – I think it was overtime. He took a crazy sack after holding onto the ball for 10 seconds. And so I think, like, the context has to matter. And when you talk about an older quarterback, he's 25, going to be 26, coming into the NFL, I don't view throwaways as a negative trait. I view it as a pro-ready trait as long as the throwaways are not panic-driven. And I think that's the concern with Tyler is he sees pressure, and at times you see on tape there's a little bit of panic. But there's also some really good tape of navigating pressure, sliding out, keeping his shoulders square so that he can release the ball. He can get a quick release, even rolling away from his arm side. So I'm just like I think that's an interesting conversation to have over, okay, a lot of throwaways, but throwaways aren't necessarily a negative thing.
Yeah, and we highlight this really beautifully on SumerSports.com. You can go to our draft guide and check out some of the draft picks that the Saints have made. And we basically have it broken down. When he drops back to pass, what ends up happening? And so he has a really, really low scramble rate, as you were kind of highlighting. One of the lower ones among NCAA quarterbacks last year. But he has a pretty good sack rate. He's not taking bad sacks. And as you noted, the way that he gets out of pressure is by throwing the ball away. We have those further broken down with pressure. Again, the pressure to sack ratio is excellent. Even when he does receive pressure, he's not going to take a sack. when it comes down to it. Typically, he's going to limit those negative plays. And frankly, we saw Bo Nix, for example, and I think that's kind of the path to success, even though Bo Nix did have a little bit more outside scrambling to a certain degree. But we saw Bo Nix last year be able to totally limit sacks. He was one of the players who lost the least EPA, expected points added, basically putting yards in context of down, distance, and place on the field. He lost the least EPA. That's why he was successful, even in the face of, you know, having some struggles with accuracy, not necessarily, you know, being a top quarterback, but because he limited his sacks so well, and also was able to make it into other plays, that was his superpower. It's the same kind of formula for Tyler Shuck as well.
Sam, we talked to you about positional value, and the Raiders taking the swing with Ashton Gentry with the sixth overall pick. His rookie contract worth approximately $32 million fully guaranteed. So the second highest paid running back in terms of guaranteed money in the NFL. And that was kind of what you had warned about, taking a running back that high. Same thing with like the tight end position. The Saints going with Kelvin Banks, though, left tackle. It's obviously, in terms of the money paid out to the position, a premium position. Your thoughts on the selection at pick nine?
So when I go back and look at the great Saints years, even all the way back to the Super Bowl year, the kind of hidden story is that they just had excellent offensive linemen. I'm talking like two or three Pro Bowlers. My background on my work computer that I'm looking right now is the Pro Bowl year with Michael Thomas and Cam Jordan. And you notice that Teron Armstead and some of these other guys were Pro Bowlers during that time. So I think what the Saints are trying to do, and I think this is the real takeaway from the Eagles, it's not necessarily that the Eagles got Saquon Barkley. It's that they have three borderline Hall of Fame linemen and potentially five Pro Bowlers. At least one got paid. The one that wasn't a Pro Bowler, Mekhi Becton, went to the Chargers and got some serious payment as a result of his efforts. And I think that's what the Saints are trying to do. Here's a little bit more about Kelvin Banks. I think teams were substantially higher on him after the combine than the media was. I think the media got kind of caught up in Armon Mimbu's excellent combine performance and immediately, as a result, projected him to be the second best tackle. He did end up going second, but as we saw, tackles were flying off the board. And, you know, when I talk to our scouts that we have at Sumer Sports, they also think that Kelvin Banks can swing across the line. He can play guard. Obviously, we have Trevor Penning, and we also have Fuaga, who were highly drafted as well. He can play guard. He can kind of play all over the place. I just think it's an excellent pick because more and more we're starting to see teams go after these swing offensive linemen, and they always end up being excellent players. And here's another item that I got from teams. Obviously, we don't necessarily have character grades here at Sumer Sports. When I was talking to my friends who were data analysts, they actually picked up that guys with super high character grades end up being excellent swing offensive linemen. There's a pretty good correlation between that, or at least a correlation that they felt was important. And Kelvin Banks is one of the highest character guys in this draft class. I think when you mix the character aspects, the positional value aspects, and then the idea that he can play multiple places across the line, and he was immensely productive in college, it was just a good by the book, you know, strike pick.
Looking at things, Sam, I think the biggest, I guess, newsworthy stuff from the draft was definitely the fall of a guy like Shedeur Sanders that was documented. I think, you know, some were expecting the Saints to take him at nine. Then he ended up, all right, he's going to get picked by the Steelers at number 21. And then when that didn't happen, it was like, uh-oh, where's this guy going to land? But I don't think the drop was expected to be that dramatic. Curious on, one, what did you think of what happened in that situation there? And two, what are the Cleveland Browns doing taking, you know, two quarterbacks in this year's draft class and how they end up?
So again, I'm a data scientist. I try to limit it to the data.
Okay,
so
yeah.
So in my standpoint, this was clearly kind of a one-of-one event that had other things going on. You look at Shedeur Sanders' data profile, his superpower was accuracy. His accuracy was similar to, you know, some guys like Justin Fields, Mac Jones coming out of college. Obviously, their career didn't turn out exactly correctly, but they were highly touted at the time just to get a sense of, you know, where he probably would have projected into the draft. His accuracy was similar to that, very high, one of the highest that we had in recent years here at Sumer Sports using our millisecond by millisecond accuracy ratings. the downside was the sacks, basically the opposite of Tyler Shuck. Not a good pressure to sack ratio, took way too many sacks, and the worry was those negative plays. But Jaden Daniels, for example, struggled with sacks as well at LSU, was able to limit that last year. But all that to say, he's still projected to be a solid day one or day two quarterback. I think the side kind of bar that people didn't really expect is that if you look at these teams' rosters, there's 6 to 8 teams that are still evaluating quarterbacks on their rookie contract. That's an immensely high number historically. And as a result, only a few teams really needed quarterbacks. And I think they were kind of playing a game of chicken in day one and day two of who could kind of wait it out the longest and still get some good players at the other positions. The real question that I have is once you start getting to day two, you can go ahead and select a backup quarterback and feel good about it. We've seen Jalen Hurts come off the board, Dak Prescott come off the board, and those ended up working out. I was kind of shocked that no one took the chance until the Browns way down the line. Talking about the Browns, obviously they have Dylan Gabriel. They liked him more. Politics aside, because there could be a lot of kind of ramifications of selecting Dylan Gabriel, then all of a sudden going and selecting Shedeur Sanders. But I think they're going to get their reps ironed out in rookie camp, see who they like, and continue evaluating reps into training camp. I think it'll be an excellent quarterback challenge. The one problem coming from teams, which people don't really think about, is there's only so many reps in training camp, and typically you want to give those to your top guys to get ready for the season. They have so many guys, they're going to have to maybe reevaluate how they are going to set up those reps just to try to figure it out. But for the most part, I'm okay with, you know, grabbing the value of Shedeur Sanders that deep in the draft, especially given he projected as a certified, you know, kind of round one, round two guy.
Sam, you mean there's no data for a Hall of Fame dad that likes to meddle in your business?
So I came up in the basketball business, right? I worked with Langston Galloway, who has played for the Pelicans, is from Baton Rouge for years and years. And so I know a lot of people in that industry, and there's a lot of great Tulane alum in that industry as well. And so I was kind of asking around if they had seen something like this before. What kind of came up were two items, Bol Bol, for example, the former son or the son of Manute Bol. Yeah. There was kind of character concerns there, but it really had nothing to do with the relationship to his dad. That was one item that came up. And then the second one, obviously, was the Bronny James and LeBron James item, where there was real questions if someone selected Bronny, if LeBron would ask to go to that team. He ended up going to Lakers. I think it was wildly different there because Bronny really wasn't, you know, he's a borderline NBA G League level guy. Also high, super high character. Everyone thought he was a good kid. He had a heart attack, which was a whole other thing. And LeBron obviously is still one of the best players in the league. So it was a totally different value calculation. But those were two items that did come up when I was asking around the industry of something similar to that. And frankly, neither of those guys were the level of prospect or the level of positional importance that Shedeur Sanders were at. So as I said, this is kind of a crazy event. I'm kind of shocked it went this far.
You know, going back to your computer background, one of the things I remember about that photo that I think a lot of people forget, Larry Warford is in it. Like, you're talking about, oh, you have all these players. That's Larry Warford was a Pro Bowler for that team. Like, that's the type of offensive line you were looking at. Even the guys you forget about were Pro Bowlers.
Exactly.
So, you know, I know you're a data guy, so I'm sure you have the numbers on this. What would you, you know, if you have one or two for each, what would you say were the biggest steals of this draft? Not necessarily for the Saints, but just overall. And what were some of the biggest reaches of this draft?
Yeah, so we talked about the running back thing earlier. I think that was kind of a big reach. I would not advise as an analyst to go and get a running back Ashton Jeanty with pick 6. That's not saying it's not going to turn out well. There's just so much expectation. He basically has to be, you know, a top 5 guy immediately. But then you look at what teams like the Ravens did, for example. Malachi Starks falls to them. They pick him up. They're going to put him in a big position to succeed. There were some, you know, questions about why he was falling. Based on our metrics, there are some questions more than just pop up on the tape about his coverage ability, but I think they're going to put him in a position to succeed. And then, you know, character concerns aside, for example, I know there's a lot around Mike Green, but just looking at the data, he was immensely effective, an excellent pressure rate. They end up picking him up you know, way, way, way down the line. So I think that was a pretty good get. And then let's talk about the trades a little bit as well. You look at the NFC South, the Panthers and the Falcons were highly active. I think it was a little bit of a push for that James Pierce trade. I think the Rams maybe pulled the wool over the Giants' eyes and then used that to kind of ask a lot of the Falcons as well. Giving up a next year first-round pick for the 26th pick in the draft seems, you know, pretty crazy, and now the Rams are positioned to basically replace Matthew Stafford immediately. That was kind of a reach. But then you look at what the Panthers did. You know, I'm a little biased. My old boss, Eric Eager, now is their VP of analytics. The trades up that they did what we like to call pick swaps. So there was a 4-for-4 pick swap that people were saying, you know, it got to be easier than this. But the whole point of that is that both teams end up kind of getting the same value, but it's in different places. And so, for example, they end up getting Nick Skorton and Donovan as they ended up giving Donovan Ezeraka, who was Princely Umen Mielen from Ole Miss. And as a result, they fill a position of need and don't lose too much value. I like the trade that happened. So those were kind of the four items and four teams that I thought did a interesting job that caught my eye.
And Sam, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about the big splash trade at the very top of the draft, the Browns trading the number 2 overall pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who moved up and drafted Travis Hunter. Meanwhile, the Jaguars moved on from their 5th overall pick, a second round pick this year, the 36th overall pick, which ended up turning into Quinshon Judkins, the 4th round pick, and then a 2026 first round pick, all just to move up those three spots. I know that Travis Hunter is a unicorn, but it was a heavy price to pay for James Gladstone, the new GM there.
Yeah, the bet's pretty simple. The bet is that he's going to be a Pro Bowl level player at two positions, as far as I see it. Now, is that going to happen? Probably not. We've never really seen it ever happen before. But if you're just looking at the sheer compensation, it seems like the bet is A, Travis Hunter is a unicorn, and B, we're going to play him at both positions. And as a result, that first round pick last year is actually going to roll over into this year, and we're going to get two players, Travis Hunter, the offensive player, and Travis Hunter, the defensive player. My understanding from the press conferences is they're going to allow him to play both ways, but he's primarily going to be an offensive player. I think if you look at the positional value, that probably makes sense to a certain degree. I personally thought he was a little better at the cornerback position. I thought you could play him down and down at the cornerback position and use him in packages on offense, a la kind of what Taysom Hill would do on offense as well. And like you said, it's a steep price to pay. I don't know if I personally would have paid it, but he was the only blue chip eye-popping guy in this draft. And if you're a first-time GM, I guess you want to make a splash. You want to get a culture guy. Travis Hunter is the guy probably to do that for.
Sam, definitely love all the insights you give here. I want to give you a chance here. Let fans know out there, all the hoodats that consider themselves to the football nerds, if you would say, what they can find at sumersports.com. I know great analytics stuff on your site.
Yeah, so we're actually coming out with a little documentary on Monday about former Saint Jonathan Casillas. From undrafted to unforgettable, you can check that out on all of our channels. We're going to have an excellent write-up on him, a really cool documentary. And if you want to learn a little bit more about a Saints legend and a member of that excellent Super Bowl team, check it out at Sumer Sports on Twitter, X, or sumersports.com. That's S-U-M-E-R sports.com.
Sam the Man Bruckhouse, thanks so much for the time, and happy end of draft. Enjoy the rest of the weekend as we get ready now for mini camps to crank up.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. I got the NBA playoffs pulled up, so I'm excited to watch a little basketball after 6 months of football, or even more.
Right. Thank you, Sam, for the time today. Former Tulane linebacker, Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst, and data scientist Sam Bruckhouse joining us there. Always got a wealth of knowledge. Appreciate hearing from him. I know he's probably gassed too after all his coverage. We're breaking you till 1 o'clock today as we get ready for LSU baseball's Game 3 against Tennessee. First pitch, 2 o'clock, right here on WWL. We'll be back with more of our Draft Fest coverage after this. Stay tuned on The Big One, WWL. Welcome back into WWL's Draft Fest Sunday. I want to remind everybody it is worth taking a time off work tomorrow for Draft Monday. Join Bobby Hebert and WWL draft analyst Mike Dettillier for their draft second guest at the Silva Slipa Casino. Definitely worth the drive to beautiful Bay St. Louis. Grab your Saints crew and make it a day. Meet up with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, and Mike D at the Silver Slipper, your coast with the most. Talk Saints football, size up the draft and the competition in the NFC South, and celebrate football. The draft second guest tomorrow, 4 to 8 here on Saints Radio WWL, where the great Archie Manning will also drop by to discuss new quarterback Tyler Shuck. Must listen radio right there. We'll be right back with more of our draft show to recap and get you ready for LSU baseball right after this. Back here as we get to wrap up our Draft Fest Sunday recap show, Steve Geller, Charlie Long, Jeff Nowak, also Cullen Steele, keeping us all in line behind the board right now. The NFL draft over. We survived, and the Saints come out of it with 9 selections plus their UDFA undrafted free agent classes also set. And look forward to now rookie minicamp. We'll get to, at least to talk more to these guys and see how things went in, you know, it's a whole new regime. And it's like you feel this overwhelming breath of fresh air, I guess you could say, between the coaches and a ton of new players.
Yeah. I hope that as we get forward in this process, the excitement is going to outweigh complaining about everything, because I'm so tired of complaining about everything, man. I want to be excited about a young quarterback, and I don't care if he's 25. He's a fresh NFL
he's so
quarterback.
Old.
It's a new era. It's a new head coach. It's a whole new group of players, man. He brought in 9 players for a reason. You can call him Unk if you want. I'm okay with that. Unk Shuck. Shuck Unk. Shunk. Anyway, I'm excited about it. And like, yeah, this season might not be great, but I think you're building towards something. And that's where I see this draft class. Like, you added a ton of young players. Like, these are players who should be a core of your group, leaders of your team in 5-6 years, right? So I'm excited about it. And I'm looking forward to rookie minicamp, looking forward to seeing these guys out there, looking forward to what this team looks like.
9 picks, 9 positions as well. I think that's pretty interesting considering what we were just talking about with the Browns taking 2 quarterbacks and 2 running backs. You get offensive tackle, quarterback, defensive tackle, safety, linebacker, cornerback, running back, tight end, defensive end.
Yeah, there was a run there. It was like, what was it, 4 or 5 straight defensive picks?
4 straight defensive picks.
4 straight defensive picks.
But that's kind of my point, is that you addressed all these different holes. Now, the one thing that they didn't really address, and Mickey talked about it last night, wide receiver.
Yep.
Exactly. But the way, I guess, the board fell, like they were never really in position to get a receiver. The other thing is, what did this receiver room need? It needed the big body guy. This draft didn't have many of them. Like, it was Tet McMillan, who went number 8 right before the Saints picked at 9. And then
Jaden Higgins
from Iowa State, who went with the second pick of the second round. He went 34th overall, basically 6 picks before you. And if you were committed to drafting Tyler Shuck with your second round pick, he wasn't really in the conversation anyway. So, yes, they still needed a big body receiver, but you weren't really finding that in this draft class. It was a lot more of slot, kind of speedy guys than, you know, the traditional big X.
Yeah, I think is that Keenan Allen's music I hear? I think I hear Keenan Allen's music. That's weird.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're the Bucks, you can just keep running out all these slot guys and just have them tear up every opposing defense they go up against. Emeka Buka is going to be so good, man. I'm not looking forward to that at all.
Wait, what are you talking about? I'm talking about Keenan Allen, the receiver that's a free agent that I think the Saints are going to sign. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about the style of play.
No.
I was thinking, you know, along your lines, Jeff, I went to start looking at those free agent wide receivers. Also a guy like Amari Cooper out there as well. But I'm curious to see. I do think they're going to have to go that route with the veteran free agent because of, you know, you didn't get the young guy in this draft, and that bigger type body you do need, I feel, in this offense.
Yeah, and you're in that range. You're not going to ruin a comp pick. A 1-year deal is not going to kill you. And I think you do need one kind of veteran option that is beyond Cedric Wilson, Brandon Cooks, but we'll see.
Thanks for joining us here on our Draft Fest Sunday recap show. For Cullen Steele, Charlie Long, Jeff Nowak, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great one, everybody. Hope you enjoy your Jazz Fest after Draft Fest. So stay tuned for LSU baseball if you're into that right after this on the Big One WWL.